Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
7, 6, 5, 4. We've gone for main engine start. We have main engine start.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
This is it. A new concept is born. The best of TV combined with the best of radio. Now, starting right now, you'll never look at music the same way again.
You don't know you're beautiful. How does it? I don't know how it goes. Hello and welcome to the It's Nice That podcast with me, Alex Beck.
And me, Will Hudson.
Nice That is a website showcasing creative work from all around the world.
Looking at everything from design to video, photography and everything else in between.
In this series, we're going to pick creative things that people like and experience and try to work out why they're successful. Today we're speaking about something that I guess is very dear to my heart. I was writing about this subject for about 5 years on It's Nice That every single Monday morning. Lots of these things get shared around the office all the time. We all have different ways in. We have our favourite. Today, we're going to be looking at music videos.
Yeah, something that I think I might know or have an opinion about.
Good. Well, that's a relief for all our listeners out there. Will has an opinion on this topic. So, I don't know. It's something that we both feel very familiar with, obviously. A lot of people are very familiar with music videos. We were children of the 80s, so MTV was obviously a big part of our childhood.
Massive part. I have a really good story about MTV and music TV.
Music TV. Oh my God.
Is that not what stands for?
Stick with us.
So when we had Virgin Media installed, which I think was called like Birmingham Broadband or something, when the guys there setting it up, and I think it was during a school holiday, when he got it working, the first channel that came on was a channel called The Box. Do you remember The Box?
Yeah, I do remember The Box with the ticker along the bottom.
Yeah, and it was back-to-back music videos. That was all it was. And the first music video that came on when he turned on the TV in The Box was Jamiroquai's Virtual Insanity.
Virtual? You mean Virtual Insanity?
Yeah.
Great start.
That's the one. It's the music video where the floor's moving and the walls are moving. And like visually, it's interesting. And I guess as a teenager, I thought Jamiroquai was quite good.
That video is amazing. I love that video.
Did you know who directed that music video?
No.
Jonathan Glazer.
There you go.
Isn't that amazing? I only found that out in the research for this.
It's funny that in our generation, there were those three famous music video DVDs, those directors, you know, it was Gondry, Chris Cunningham, John Glazer. And actually, was Spike Jonze one of them?
Yeah.
Well, those DVDs seem to completely inform our generation's understanding of music videos. They were the be-all and end-all.
And all that was picking directors that had done a number of music videos. They showed the music video, but they spoke to, like, the musician, they spoke to the people that worked on it, they spoke to kind of cultural figures from around that time.
I remember going to your room in uni, in halls, you had all four of those videos, and I was like, posh kid.
Posh? Oh, four DVDs? Oh, I don't know about that. Do you have a favourite?
I have so many favourite music videos. For me, thinking about that and thinking about favourites was almost like word association. I thought of one, and that reminded me of that also out of my life at the time, which reminded me of a girlfriend or reminded me of a mate or reminded me of a holiday. And it's weirdly easy to just get completely lost in it, that I didn't really need any encouragement to go and find another one. It was like that linked to that, linked to that, which I don't really have now.
But in the same way, I have the same feeling when I hear certain albums. I still think there's a similar thing with music videos as there are record sleeves, which is my favourite music videos tend to be my favourite music. I don't watch them going, oh, this is a really great short film. It's like, unless I want to listen to the song, I'm just not interested. I couldn't name a Katy Perry music video.
Yeah, right.
Because I've never gone, really want to check out that latest Katy Perry music.
What about this then? I'm with you because a great music video needs a great song, I think. I really do think that the ones that stand the test of the time or the ones that really have proper legacy are the ones that are amazing songs. I bet there's tons of really great ones that we didn't really ever think of or even refer back to for this. But what I kind of ended up thinking about is there's certain artists who nail a back catalogue of music videos, don't they? Like there's a, you've got a Radiohead or you've got a Fatboy Slim. I don't know. I love that depth from one artist to really nail like almost a body of work. It doesn't really seem to matter what the music is or who they work with. There's always a dedication to make them amazing. And you know, Chemical Brothers, all of those with Michel Gondry, the Star Guitar, and there's just so many beautiful music videos there that I don't know if people do that looking at their music videos as a body anymore.
It's cliche to go back to kind of like pulling out context as reason for stuff, but the likes of Radiohead, I think because of who they are and the brand that is Radiohead, they have to go and do those kind of music videos. The likes of One Direction, I ventured into One Direction music videos for the research of this.
Yeah, right.
It's exactly what you'd imagine. The song, is it You Don't Know You're Beautiful? I almost started singing it then. What Makes You Beautiful?
Don't pretend.
862 million views. It's basically them just pissing about by the sea, just like frolicking around, splashing in the sea.
But that's what the audience wants, mate.
Exactly. But that's what I mean. It's like you almost Radiohead have to have Radiohead-style music videos. One Direction could not get away with trying to do something that experimental.
But the big difference is, to Radiohead, I believe that the way they approach them is very natural for who they are. For me, One Direction, they're going, frolic in the sea, get your hair wet, Harry, wear a t-shirt.
Long hair as well.
Wear a t-shirt.
Zayn was still hanging out.
That's a bit see-through. Bosh, you got yourself a hit.
But that's what I mean, is it's servicing the people that it's trying to talk to.
But the absolute queen, Beyonce, Lemonade, or that one before that where she released a video for every single track. That, for me, is genius. And I hadn't really engaged with Lemonade as a concept, but watching that all night, that first song and the way she sets that up, it's beautiful, man. It's like an incredible bit of cinema. It's an amazing film, amazing trailer. And for me, that's the other end of where it can get incredible, is like really amazing short film set to music. Like the other way around, forget the music completely. She's making such a more interesting, broader point than just, oh, I'm promoting my album. I think music videos go beyond just promoting an album, or can do if they're really amazing.
I've got so much more respect for Beyonce. And I think she actually fits that example of the music that I otherwise wouldn't have engaged with. But watching some of her music videos, they are so consistently brilliant. And I really enjoyed watching them.
MTV was only really started in 1981. That's older than both me and you, Will. So I'm interested mostly in finding out how they've actually changed over those times. What makes a brilliant one? What we really remember about them? What stands out? And I want to know what's your favourite one, Will.
Later, Alex. I'm interested in what actually goes into making them. I think when they're at their best, they look effortless and super simple, but I'm sure there's loads more that goes into actually making them happen.
We'll be speaking to music critic, writer and professor of media studies at Evergreen State College, Gina Arnold.
We're also going to be hearing from Beyonce's longtime choreographer and creative director, Frank Gatson Jr., as well as Young Thug video director, Ryan Stack.
What about sunrise?
A music video that always sticks out to me is Earth Song by Michael Jackson. You know, the whole song is just a question. You know, what about everyone? Like, what about humanity? So it's Michael Jackson's humanitarian sort of preach love song. Is there a time? It was like the most heartfelt one because it was like him and the people. It was like him and like the Native Americans and like the destroyed earth. It was like the ends of the world. And he was in ragged clothes with a white t-shirt, obviously looking just like super clean. And he was just sort of just in the middle screaming. And everyone else around him is just in pain. As a seven-year-old, I don't know if I really probably took in the like what it was really about. I just quite liked the song, and like when he did the breakdown and screamed, I always used to sing along to it.
Our next guest is a seasoned music journalist.
Hi, I'm Gina Arnold. I worked for Rolling Stone, Spin, The Village Voice, and a lot of other places. And I wrote three books about music, including a book about Nirvana.
She's currently Professor of Media Studies at Evergreen State College and edited a book called Music Video, Histories, Aesthetics, Media, due out later this year.
It's a collection of about 30 essays that discuss the origins of music video and how music video has evolved from its initial sort of conception as a promotional tool.
So the origins of music videos were as a commercial promotional tool, right? That's how they came to be.
Well, essentially, the music video as we know it or as it's talked about in culture is as a promotional vehicle, an expansion of music into a more visual realm, which at the time that it became popular in about 1980, people saw music as sort of coming to an end, like rock music as being kind of near on its last legs. The visual form was sort of a way to enhance it and bring it to more people.
And then obviously it's become something completely different now. You know, what have been the major things between the 1980s and now?
Well, the most important change is just the way that music videos are disseminated. To begin with, they were only shown on cable television in America, and I think similarly in England. The main place that you would see an actual promotional video would be on a cable station, which was kind of a limited audience. So that kind of limited its audience sort of the same way that a radio station would have its own sort of parameters of who would be listening. But because of the internet and streaming and YouTube and social media and all the different ways that videos can now be circulated, they have a much, much wider audience and also a much, much broader number of people are making them because of the ease now of using iPhones and things like that to make your own video. So basically the consumer has become the creator, and that's really changed what music videos look like.
Am I right in thinking that you once had an assignment to watch MTV for 24 hours straight? Am I making that up?
No, that's true. I had that assignment quite early in the world of MTV, so it was about 1985, maybe 1986. And at the time, it seemed sort of innovative to stay up all night for 24 hours watching MTV. Now you would just ask them to send you the playlist. But what I found out was that they only played about 9 or 10 videos per hour. So I remember I saw one Paula Abdul video something like 12 times.
Wow.
And by the 12th time, you start to have suicidal thoughts. There's lots of cliches in videos, and although you notice them the first time, by the 12th time, you really find you have a lot to say about it.
What are some of the cliches you saw then?
Well, those were the days when people used to act out the lyrics to videos. To a song in a video. So a video would basically be either the artist singing the song and then breaking away to a sort of acted out scene of a girl and a guy having a fight or whatever the song was about. Or there would be the quote-unquote creative videos where people danced in formation, usually sort of a triangular formation with someone at the front, the star at the front, and everybody else kind of branching backwards, doing these kind of hip-hop-y dances. So those were the two main cliches at the time.
And am I right in saying that as a result of the music video being introduced, some bands actually kind of suffered because essentially kind of the way in which they looked hampered their opportunity to get signed?
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that did happen, although it would be very difficult to quantify that or say to whom it happened to. But there was a lot of anxiety in the 80s amongst rock critics and sort of cultural critics that the advent of the music video was going to sort of ruin the authenticity of music and take away its musicality by emphasizing instead visual aspects. And to a certain extent, that did happen. And certainly music companies started to look more at how bands looked and how they performed in static settings more than at the music.
That makes sense. And so is there a point or are there any good examples of bands who took the video from being a promotional tool to more of an art form?
Yeah, there was a lot of bands who used it to their advantage, especially in England. For some reason, a lot of bands really saw the potential of music videos more than in America. In America, a lot of bands become big or get signed by going on tour and playing live for years and years and years, and they sort of hone their live skills. But in England, a lot of bands become sort of form bands and become quite big very, very quickly when they're 18 or 19 years old. You know, they get on the cover of NME, and they don't really play that much, so they're not always as good live. And for a lot of those bands, the music video was really, really crucial in getting huge. So bands like Depeche Mode and New Order, I think, really took advantage of the mode. Bands that were a lot about fashion and style.
In your expert opinion, no pressure, what makes a really great music video?
I think a really great music video is one that conveys the vision of the song in terms of its mood or its emotion without being too rigid in plot or in interpreting lyrics. I think sometimes there's been some very great directors who've been able to do that. Anton Corbin is one that comes to mind. And some of the New Order videos that have been really good. I think there was one by Jonathan Demme, who recently passed away. You know, that we're able to just kind of add a mood to the song without actually imposing a lot of meaning into it. And then sometimes the meaning becomes clear through the visuals.
And do you think what tends to happen is that the song and how popular the band is or the artist is, it's reflected in the music video? Have you identified many music videos where the music video is hailed but the song is actually kind of dismissed?
No, I think one of the surprising things about music videos is that they really are only as good as the song. OK Go are a band whose music, although good, is not probably transcendently good. They almost fit more into the museum quality music video that you would expect to see their videos in an art museum, you know, maybe at the Venice Biennale or the Whitney Biennale, you know, on the wall next to things by Nam June Paik or something like that. So they do put that kind of care into their videos.
I have to ask you what your favorite music video of all time is. Sorry, it's such an obvious question.
It is an obvious question, and my answer is probably really, really obvious also, which is, I think, Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana is probably my favorite music video, in part because of my own association with the band and because at that time was such an exciting time in my life, but also because I thought that particular video in which they play the song live in a high school gym to a very, very dark, gothic version of any American high school where the cheerleaders, instead of being the pretty blonde girls, are dark-haired girls with tattoos wearing anarchy symbols on their chest, and where the janitor of the gym is dancing to this song, was just a perfect, perfect crystallization of their vision and their role in America. It was transcendent in the sense that they managed to convey that so well in that video.
But also kind of so simply and kind of almost traditionally, right? It's a band playing their song to the camera obviously there's more drama around it than that, but it's amazing that, yeah, it kind of harks back to that original purpose of the music video, was to show the people playing the music, right?
Yeah, it did a lot of things and it did them very well. That song has very impenetrable lyrics, you know, a new motto, an albino, a mosquito, a denial. What did they mean? I think for some reason, everybody in America understood exactly what they meant at the same time, despite the impenetrability. And part of that was because of that video.
Do you think there's a formula for a great music video? Do you think there's some tick boxes you can do to guarantee success?
Oh, wow. A formula? No, if there was a formula for it, then everybody would immediately do it, right? It has to be original. And I do think if I were in a band and I was going to make a music video, I would find a director, a film director, or a visual artist whose work I admired, and I would ask them if they could relate to my music, what they heard in my music. That's how I would go about it.
Gina, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Gina.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
It must be amazing to look back as far as she has and to see the absolute massive difference. The idea that Nirvana video that she spoke about, which is a great video, would only have been seen on MTV.
But the Nirvana thing, weirdly, I totally understand within the context that the year that would have come out, you'd have had kids watching that going, that's what I'm buying into. That is like a piece that says, if you're into Nirvana, this is the look, this is the attitude, this is everything, which you definitely get some of through just listening to the music, but accompanied with the video, it's just so reinforced.
And I love the idea that the consumer is becoming the creator. I get very excited about that idea that democratization, that anyone can kind of make a music video now, right? People got a phone, they can do that very cheaply, and it isn't this elite thing anymore. I find that really exciting. It must be terrifying a bit for the music video directors, but I guess not many people are making a living out of music videos anymore, right?
No, but I think like everything, when people feel threatened about the democratization of something, it will give people who aren't necessarily getting visibility the opportunity to kind of be flung into that world through being proactive and doing something and getting it out there. And with the likes of YouTube, it's very easy to do that now. But you're still not going to get, Beyonce is not going to go, let's get that kid that did that thing on his iPhone. But the kid might get his first job as a runner, might get his first job as an assistant and build their way up in that way. I think that's great.
I also thought what Gina said about how a music video can only be as good as the song. I'm very interested to talk to a director to actually see if they agree with that.
how I remember it might not be true, but I feel like Joey was wearing like clay pants, like pants made out of clay. And they were all just like, come on! Like, as if, like, women were like football hooligans. And before that, I'd never seen women act like football hooligans. And for me, that was like really liberating. And I saw them and they were like, come on! And actually, since then, I haven't seen, like, for me, seen women be like, fucking come on. And I loved that. And I think I responded to that. And everyone at my school, I was 13, responded to that. So I went into the playground and it was a summer holiday that came out. And I went back in September and the coolest girl in the year came up to me in the playground. She was like, have you heard about the Spice Girls? Have you seen their new video? Like, it was revolutionary. You have got to give. Taking is too easy, but that's the
way it is. Our next guest has choreographed pretty much every Beyoncé dance since she was in Destiny's Child.
My name is Frank Gadson Jr. G-A-T-S-O-N, not G-A-S-T-O-N. Those are the rich ones from France.
He's worked with some of the biggest names in music history, including Michael Jackson.
I am a director, I'm a creative director, and I'm a choreographer, and I'm a manager. So I kind of do it all.
Let's hear from Frank Gadson Jr.
I was supposed to go to school to be a lawyer, okay? I went to University of Wisconsin in Madison, but I had gone to Broadway in my senior year to go see The Wiz. And the Monkees, they were guy dancers. They weren't the guys on motorcycles with bad breath and big rotten teeth. They were beautiful black guys who jumped and danced so high. And I said, I want to do that. But, you know, you don't think you can do that coming from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So I went to college, but when I was in the University of Wisconsin-Madison, because I had that bug of seeing those guys dance in The Wiz, I took dance classes, like, on the low at University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I went on the road for 3 years, traveling the world, dancing and singing with this group called Up With People. People thought we were a cult, but we weren't a cult. You know, we did all kind of dancing. You know, we did folkloric dancing, we did Spanish dancing, we did Russian dancing, we did 1920s dancing, we did 1960s dancing. And it was just such a valuable thing in my life. And I think I was a star. I was a star in it. But when I got out of it, I didn't have the goods. You know, I didn't have the training I needed. So I moved to New York. And I started training at Avenue, and I started training at a place called the Broadway Dance Center. And then many people don't know this, and I'm going to tell you this just because you need to know this, but I interviewed to be a flight attendant, and I got it. But I let nobody know. I felt like I was Superman. Well, I traveled all around the world, and I would dance everywhere, in Paris, everywhere, and audition everywhere. But then I flew into L.A. and auditioned for Smooth Criminal. And I got it. You know, I guess life is like destiny and your fate is going to be what it's going to be. It was amazing. Like, Michael has so much money in the budget to do a music video. We spent like 2 months on that video. They don't do that anymore. Like, we would come to the set every day. They would put us in full hair, makeup, wardrobe, and we would learn movement in full hair, makeup, and wardrobe. That was amazing, okay? Then, you know, they had removable walls. They had cameras everywhere. I think the producer of Superman produced this movie.
You've got more movement. It should be more like something's going on inside you. I mean, that's why when we build it to a mountain and we bring it back down.
And every day was just an experience. And Michael would come and he would just be the nicest guy. His mother came to the set, and she was there with her friend. She's sitting there watching her son, and she was eating popcorn. And you know how when women eat popcorn, you get the salt on your finger, and you twinkle your finger to make the salt come off? So I saw Michael Jackson's mother do this. That's when I knew Michael was human. And I said to myself right then and there, they're black, just like my mother. I can be a star. And then I'm going to skip ahead. There's a lot of artists I work with. There's a lot of music videos that I danced in. And I just did a lot of various videos. So I got Body Glove, Dancing as a Dancer, In Vogue. I even danced in Janet Jackson, All Right, as a dancer. You know, I'm in there doing a split. I just got to say it in a humble way, please get my resume from my agent and then because it's a lot of people. I'm very fortunate to have a career since 1987. And now, a lady from Columbia Records named Camille sees my work with Invoke and she introduces me to Destiny's Child. And that's where I first meet Beyonce. And I'll never forget her walking in the room. And I swear to God, I walked out of that rehearsal that day, that very first day. The video we were rehearsing for was No. I told everybody I just met the second coming of Michael Jackson. Everybody laughed. But now they see, okay? So that's the fact. I've done every video with Beyonce since she started her solo career. I didn't work with Lemonade because I was working with my girl group and doing a TV show with Kelly. But everything Beyonce's done, I've done since Crazy in Love. I won an MTV award with her on that. Single Ladies, of course. The inspiration for Single Ladies was Beyonce and myself at two different times in our lives. I guess we saw this video on YouTube called The Mexican Breakfast Club. But somebody had taken the video of the Mexican Breakfast Club with Gwen Burton, Bob Fosse's wife, and edited different music called Walk It Out. And you know, we had seen it way before we were getting ready to do Single Ladies, but we both remembered it. And so Beyonce, out of nowhere, called me and I was in Vegas. I'll never forget that. Now that I think about it. And she said, I want to do this. I know we'll put the work in. And, you know, we took about 2 months, you know, working on it and changing it, working it. We auditioned all kind of girls for it. But it was just the fact that Beyonce challenged us. And then I kind of got into like a, what do you call it? A creative block. You know, she didn't want it to be just like Bob Fosse's choreography. She wanted it to have that feeling. So, you know, she asked me, you know, Frank, maybe you should collaborate with somebody on this. And so I started looking at people to collaborate with, but everybody was too predictable. But I remember I had done an audition for Michelle Williams, and it was this young kid who was 17 at the time. And he was just really magical and young and just some different kind of movement. So I called him on the phone. His name was Jaquel Knight. He choreographed that with me. I said, Jaquel, do you know how to J-set? Now, what J-setting is, if you ever go down to the Black universities, they do this movement where the girls will do an eight count. The next line does the eight count. Then the next line does the eight count. And gay guys call this thing J-setting. And now, because Jaquel was from the South, I figured he would know what J-setting was because I wanted to do it pure, not something generic. He says, of course I know what J-setting is. So I put him on a flight to come to New York the very next day. Beyonce met him. She loved him. But she said to me, she didn't say it, she had her father say it. You know, Frank, Beyonce really loves the Kaiju Quell, but she doesn't think he's experienced enough. And I said, but I am. And they trusted me. So I had this young kid, 17, 18, I think at the point, working with me. Of course, he was setting his ways and wanted to do his stuff, but I kept challenging him. I said, let's look at this again. Let's do this like this. And sure enough, we wrapped that video and Beyonce called me from the car. Frank, great call on Jaquel. Oh, I get chills thinking about it right now. And also, I got to say this. It was this restaurant down the street from Alvin Ailey, right? Well, that's where we rehearsed Single Ladies at the Alvin Ailey Studios in New York on 55th and 9th. And they used to have these hot, spicy wings at this place called Giorgio's. Shout out to Giorgio's Country Grill on 53rd and 9th. And when we would get in a creative block, we would go eat these wings. And they would make, we call them the single lady wings. They would make magic for us. Even Beyonce ate a few of these wings back in the day. They were that good, okay? And so we give a lot of credit to those spicy chicken wings. What makes a great music video, and does it always have to have dance in to like it? No. Probably the greatest music video of all times is Sinead O'Connor. Nothing Compares to You. It was amazing. It was magical. How could that woman just have that one shot and captivate you like that? That's kind of like dance, if you really believe, just her expression. So, see, dance is not always a lot of steps. Dance can be me just isolating my one index finger over and over again. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I worked with a director called Matthew Ross. Like, a lot of times, artists would be upset because Matthew would hire me as a choreographer, but there was no choreography in the video. And what Matthew would do, he would want me to work with the artist on just how to stand and how to project and how to sit in a chair the right way. So is that choreography? No. You know what I call it? I call it gesture-ography. I would think every video that's ever been created since the beginning of time has either gesture-ography in it or choreography. So movement is not always dance, as you would say. It could be how you sat in a chair. It could be how you're crossing your leg. It could be how you're looking into the camera. So dance seems like in some ways always part of it.
I've been wanting to talk to you about your gestureography, actually.
You got in there first. Thanks. I had exactly the same thing written down, you bastard.
How boring do you feel after listening to him?
I know. I want to hang out with Frank.
Let's forget each other, mate. Frank Gatson Jr. is the one for me. He's amazing.
Yeah, gold. It is that thing of as soon as you start hearing the people that have been there, worked and has built up the kind of resume, as he said, I imagine it is like pages and pages and pages. You do just get a newfound respect for something that, I mean, Beyonce's videos obviously look like, yes, there's a lot of work that's gone into them, but suddenly you go, no, there's a lot of work that's gone into
them. Also, that Single Ladies video is deceptively simple, right? It's three of them dancing, if I'm not mistaken, and it's just beautifully shot and it's amazing. But you think, yeah, the choreography is amazing, but I guess to the layman, you don't realise how much goes into that or how out there it is.
And that music video has been copied and re-uploaded to YouTube so many times. I just thought we need to go and look for more lawyers and flight attendants and get them choreographing.
Brilliant.
More music videos. But I love as well the way in which he leveraged that flight attendant job to go and dance and go and do it. And he obviously saw so many different things from different cities that he was in.
It's funny when you hear people that motivated and that talented talk about fate, that actually, no, none of it was really for me about fate. The guy put himself in all of those amazing positions, and the smooth criminal job is not fate. That is making your own luck. And I mean, I'm just completely in awe. I wish that we could talk to him all day. And Giorgio's, let's get some of those wings in.
Smooth criminal, though, 2 months for what must be a 5-6 minute music video.
They were really long back then, wasn't they? He always did really, really long ones. It is mad, isn't it? Do you think it's good that you could spend 2 months making a music video, or is that a waste of time?
I don't know. That music video obviously stands the test of time. Like, that is one. And I think so much is intrinsically linked with the actual music. So Michael Jackson has such a broad appeal. So naturally, you're going to get more people view that music video. The way in which he moved, and it becomes a spectacle. It is something that you want to watch, whether or not you're kind of interested in the music or not. But I think the music, there's something about Michael Jackson music that people, it's difficult to not enjoy listening to.
So now, Will, we've got a great idea of what goes into the choreography and all of the work behind that side of the music video. But what happens from the director's side?
Our next guest is a director of production company Pomp and Clout.
Hey, I'm Ryan Stack. I'm a music video director. I work a lot in VR, augmented reality. Now I'm going to talk about my stuff a bit today.
He is well known for turning what could have been a disastrous video shoot into a hilarious poke at the artist he was trying to help promote.
Why don't you kick off, Ryan, by telling us how you got into making music videos and a little bit about your background?
So yeah, I got into music videos initially kind of through graphic design, actually. I went to school for graphic design and was just always really interested in kind of making my work move and just kind of, I guess, you know, kind of shifting from print into animation. And I guess from animation, I kind of got into live action video and, you know, initially through sampling and ultimately through shooting my own work. I actually did one of my first projects in music videos. I guess not quite music videos, but I did the initial tour visuals for Major Lazer when they started out after Diplo saw something that I'd done on MySpace and liked
classic.
It, and which was a thing at the time. So that dates me. But but yeah, he liked this kind of video flyer that I'd done for these parties that I was throwing in Providence with some friends. And from there, I kind of realized that, you know, short form video for the music industry was a possible route for me and kind of shifted into doing music videos thereafter. So that's kind of my roundabout way of getting into the industry.
For our listeners who don't really know about the process of making a music video, how does that go? Are you sending loads of treatments? Are you approaching the artist? How does it all kick off?
It's a little bit different every time, but the gist of it is that you commonly are approached by a commissioner, a video commissioner at a label who will approach you or your production company and say, hey, we're looking for, you know, a video for X track by Y artist, and you know, we have roughly this budget, and this is kind of the loose creative brief of what they're looking for. You know, they really want a performance video with kind of like, you know, some various cool setups, or they want something conceptual and they don't want the artist in it, or we have no idea what we want and that's why we're coming to you. But it just kind of starts with that loose or strict guideline of what they're looking for. And then if you want to do it, you know, listen to the track way too much and then kind of start to formulate an idea that you think fits that, and then put it together in a treatment form, which is, you know, a bit different for every director. For me, I work in InDesign and just make like kind of a primarily visual treatment with, you know, images that I'm sourcing or mocking up in Photoshop, and then text describing what I'm talking about. But yeah, basically if the label, you know, likes the idea that you put forth and they want to kind of pursue it, almost always gets rushed into production and you have a lot less time than you would like to do it, and you go forward and do it and, you know, make it happen. But that's kind of the gist of it.
How often are you saying no to those briefs? How often are they just like completely unrealistic, or there's no budget, or, you know?
Probably one in every three things at this point I'm going for. I'm kind of getting a bit more snotty and like what I want to take, just because I have like specific ideas that I really want to do, and I don't want to get caught up putting all that blood, sweat, and tears into something that I don't really enjoy.
And how collaborative is that process? Do you like to kind of involve the artist in it, or do you prefer to kind of go, this is my area of expertise, I'm going to kind of get on and tell you what I think's best?
I kind of like just kind of being this person who's brought into the process and just kind of having my free rein to do what I really want to do. Like, I very well know that you may not like it, but like, this is my contribution, and kind of take it or leave it sort of thing. I think a lot of directors are much better at being a bit more collaborative with artists. I think what that makes happen when I, or what that kind of gives birth to when I do ideas like that, is like, I tend to do things that are, I guess, generally a bit divergent from what people expect for videos sometimes for these tracks. And I think that's kind of been my thing, I guess, is that I come with a bit more left field solutions to some of these things sometimes, and sometimes people love that, sometimes people hate it. But it's kind of how I prefer to work.
A polite way of saying you're difficult, right?
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I will say that, I mean, my most recent video, the Young Thug video, you know, that's one where Young Thug came with a very specific idea that he wanted to do, and I really liked it. And that was, you know, the plan that I went into it with to make, and it obviously didn't really pan out that way in the end. For people who haven't seen it, he didn't show up, and we kind of made the video about the fact that he didn't show up. But that in itself was like a, you know, a creative gesture that he made simply by not showing up, and kind of made the video what it is. Yeah, in cases like that, I am a bit more receptive to collaboration like that.
And how much of a battle was that? Because obviously the whole production for the Young Thug video was all on the assumption that he was going to show up, he was going to be part of it. You then get to the end of that day shoot and he's not turned up. How did you actually go about getting a music video out for that?
Throughout the shoot, it was, I mean, it was just falling apart, and it was really painful to be there on set for that and just like see everything, like just nothing going right because he wasn't there. And, you know, things going, you know, poorly in addition to that weren't even related to him not showing up. But but I guess after the fact, you know, it's kind of, it was one of those situations where I basically had to pitch the label a new treatment where I just like talked about kind of in very blunt terms the fact that we didn't have a video there. You know, like, I'd looked through the footage after we shot, you know, and confirmed our worst nightmares that we didn't have anything really usable. You know, and just kind of pitched them this new idea where I was like, we shouldn't even bother reshooting. Like, nothing we have here is really going to work, with the intentional approach in mind. Like, we should do something totally different and just kind of own this disaster. And I also offered to like do that approach for no added budget, you know, which I think kind of helped to grease the wheels on that one. And I think in that case, you know, I just benefited from this like perfect storm of, you know, an artist whose whole identity is kind of based on, you know, kind of being a I guess kind of doing things his own way and not caring as much about a lot of the expectations that a lot of other artists might have. And then I also benefited from, you know, the label being, you know, a tens of thousands of dollars in on this video already and kind of wanting to see some sort of return on it. So kind of being so far in that they want to kind of find their way out. And then also just kind of having a label that I was working with that once I pitched this to them kind of saw the value in it instead of kind of being offended by it. So I think kind of that trio of things really helped to make it, you know, make it something that was able to
to come out and happen.
When you're getting briefed from the labels and to whatever degree the artist's involved, what do they deem as success? How much do YouTube views play into that? What do they want to get out of a music video?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it is, you know, they want to get views, and I think that's kind of their primary, you know, metric they're using to get a sense of, you know, return on their investment. They're looking for press. I mean, I think that's, you know, just to briefly get back to the Young Thug video too, I think that was a big part of the pitch as well, was that I had a page in the treatment where I talked about kind of the failed video approach, where I spoke to the, you know, the possible press that this was going to get, like mocked up web browser pages that would like be like, you know, complex.com or rollingstone.com with a headline that's like, you know, Young Thug didn't show up to his video and they still made it, and tried to like speak to the actual press reception that this might get. And I think that kind of speaking that language was playing directly into like what they really were interested in getting from this video. You know, at the end of the day, if it's, you know, something beautifully shot, you know, has a great story to it, but no one's really watching it, it's kind of useless to them.
And do you have artists that you would absolutely love to work with?
Yeah, I've kind of had a rotating list. I think it'd be fun to do a Drake video. That'd be a good time.
And he'd probably show up, right? He does like, yeah, to appear would. In his own videos.
He'd be prompt. He'd be there on time.
How bad would it be if the artist suddenly found out you were the Young Thug guy and just no one ever showed up for another music video for you again, because it was like, well, he can do it without me. So,
well, that's my plight. And I'm like damaged goods. Like I always think someone's not going to show up to the date. I'll just never go on dates anymore / videos.
You were talking about technology a little bit before, and that seems like an important part of what you're going to go into. Where have you used technology in the videos you've already done that our viewers can go and have a look at?
I did a video for Route 94 that was actually using thermal cameras. I think it's pretty much entirely shot with thermal cameras. There's one or two shots that are visible light in it. I did some work with 360 cameras a while ago on this Book of Shade video that kind of got me into VR and playing with VR stuff and shooting VR. Currently doing a kind of a virtual reality reinterpretation of this Diplo video that I did called Set It Off. That's these infinite pole dancers on a stripper pole. And for that experience, which isn't out at time of recording, but maybe will be when you put this out, that'll be an in-person installation in New York City. And it's going to involve like motion captured pole dancers and kind of digitally modeled characters and motion tracking for the viewers that are in the space, and a lot of pretty ambitious technology kind of all coming together.
I mean, we were talking earlier about how the song is so critically important to the success of a music video. Do you believe the video can ever be bigger than a song, or it always needs a great song?
You know, the song, I think, in a music video is always kind of the primary driver of it. You know, like the visual accompaniment, I think, is a kind of secondary contribution of the director to the primary product of the song or whatever. You know, much like an illustrator is illustrating a story that someone has written before them, you're always naturally playing second fiddle to that a bit. And if that first element just isn't that good, it definitely makes it a lot harder to make something that is good and that people enjoy. But I think it can totally be done, you know. And I think in a lot of cases, it's possible to kind of shift the perception of the song, you know, with the visual. And I think that's like the sign of a great video if it can do that. Yeah. So I guess the short answer is yes, a good song is ideal, but it's not critical to make a good video from my perspective.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Take care, guys.
I thought it was quite interesting that he, and kind of it was alluded to as like the personality of kind of getting his own way, and you don't get that through listening to him. You don't get that kind of like, well, no, this is the deal or not. And I think I'm interested in whether or not that is a big part of working in that kind of industry, is actually the ability to just kind of win round and sell kind of what direction it should take. Because came across so nice. And I can't imagine that Young Thug scenario was that easy to deal with.
No. I like anyone who doesn't take themselves too seriously, can laugh at themselves a bit. And he seems like he can do that very comfortably, which I think is smart. I also liked how he described the idea of a music video like an illustrator illustrating a story. I'd never really thought about it like that. But obviously, you can have a great illustration and a terrible story, like you can have a great music video and a terrible song, and vice versa. But if they both marry up at once, obviously that's the perfect combo.
I think the other thing that I learned that is obvious when you think about it, but you've got to listen to that music so much before that idea resonates. And the idea of like listening to music you're not into, trying to come up with an idea, Must be awful.
Yeah, first world problems there. Come on. I mean, oh, I've listened to this great artist over and over again.
No, I'm saying if it's not a great artist or it's a shit song, it's like, oh, I finally landed that Katy Perry gig. Oh, shit.
So my favorite music video definitely is Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, because it is just this emotional journey. She just walks around in this gorgeous, like, long, like, priest, you know, outfit. You know, she's all black, and it's depressing and stuff. And she's got these, like, cool, like, man boots, and it's black and white, a lot of it. And she just walks around, and she's walking around. I think it's London. I'm not even sure, but, you know, she's walking around, and she's just sad and alone the whole time. And it's just mostly her face. That's what's so transfixing about the video, because it makes you just focus on these beautiful lines of her face and her beautiful eyes. And then, of course, when she cries and the tear and, you know, it just, and the words are so beautiful. And then so beautiful. It's like mind blowing and her eyes just sear through you. So I think that's forever my favorite music video. Forever. But nothing, I said nothing can take.
Will, we've spoken about music videos for a little while now. So, what do you think about them now? Has your opinion changed on music videos? Did you learn what you wanted to learn out of it?
I think I've definitely learned that there's a load more that goes into them than I did do before today. I will look at music videos ever so slightly differently. I will kind of now think about them as the job in which they're trying to do. Is it a promotional thing? Is it a press story? What is the reason behind them existing?
I think I've got a load more respect for the craft. Listening to Frank talk about the level of work and detail that goes into that choreography for the Beyoncé music videos. I always thought there was obviously going to be loads of work, but even just hearing it, it's kind of amazing that people are putting that much thought into essentially what I think is a complete piece of art and culture beyond this promotional tool for an artist.
No, I do think to give those involved in the making music videos credit, I think the way in which Ryan is pushing it and wants to push new technology. And he's obviously, even with the instance with Young Thug that didn't go to plan, he's still there trying to find a remedy to make that thing work, not kind of charging more for it, identifying the opportunity that it could work as a press story, not just a music video in its own right. I do think there's a lot of music videos that are being released, and I think those that we've talked about do go above and beyond. I think it's also a massive opportunity to see the kind of big directors of the future. I think undoubtedly these guys are using music videos as an opportunity to express a creative idea, be it kind of concept or be it aesthetic or be it something that they then learn from, and they'll go on and they'll be the directors of those commercials or the directors of those feature films.
I have absolutely loved getting back into viewing them, and I think I've found I remember a love for that medium that I had completely forgotten about having. You know, not really engaging with YouTube as much as I did MTV. And I think I will really actively seek more music videos now as well.
Yeah, it'd be great if someone just kind of had a channel that just played them back to back.
That's a good joke.
This episode of the It's Nice That podcast was brought to you by It's Nice That and the team at Radio Wolfgang. It featured me, Will Hudson, and Alex Beck talking to Gina Arnold and Ryan Stack, as well as an insert from Frank Gatson Jr. The executive producer was Harry Watson, the producer was Ivor Manley, and the assistant producer was Elle Scott. How often do you head down to the club to listen to pop songs, Al?
The golf club. Let's not go there.
Please keep going. If not, do it as that bit where it's like, at the end, like, well, thanks for listening, just play that, maybe twice.
Taxi driver? Ah, yeah, cool. And shower head, big knife. Is that Psycho? Okay. Dancing lady. Are those wolves? Dances with wolves? They kind of look more like foxes. Or a hedgehog. Okay, what's this? A radio, another wolf slash fox, and lots of people. Radio fox group? Radio wolf bunch? Radio Wolfgang. Radio Wolfgang emoji title. I love it. Smiley love heart eyes, winky kiss.
Hello, this is Radio Rhythm. Yeah, we're back on the air. The gold's down, but we don't care. We're mobile now. We're everywhere. Yeah, Radio Rhythm is back on the air.